Hey, what's up, flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
But we had Mary Kay on at 8:22. She was wonderful with us, even though she was on vacation in Wyoming, for crying out loud. She's going to go to Yellowstone today. And you asked the question because we got something said to us. The gambling places, the sports book, they send us, how many different emails do we get a day? We probably get a dozen different emails a day with lines because they want us to mention the sports books and things like that. And we're sports talk hosts, for crying out loud. And Kevin Stefanski's odds were the fifth best to the, what, BetOnline AG, was it?
Oh,
was it the Caesars? Which one?
Oh, it was fourth.
Fourth best. Yeah. Fourth best odds
to
be fired this year.
To be the first coach fired.
To be the first coach fired
now,
this year. Thank you.
He then had the seventh best odds to be the third coach fired.
And of course.
And then the weird one that I don't understand at all. He had the best odds to be the fifth coach fired. I don't know where they get these from.
You can gamble on anything out there. So he had the best. He had the fourth best odds to be the first coach fired in the NFL. Lima asked Mary Kay the question. Mary Kay says, no dice.
The philosophy, of course, this year is to kind of return to the Kevin Stefanski offense. So they're emphasizing, again, not only two tight ends, but three tight ends at times. And the running game is going to be back in full force. So those are the areas where they committed more resources, more draft picks than they did in the receiving core right now. And, of course, they brought Deontay Johnson on board, but he's going to really have to come out there in training camp and prove that he deserves this job. So that will be an interesting thing to watch.
So this year is not make or break for Kevin Stefanski or Andrew Berry.
No, I don't think that anyone is safe no matter what. I mean, there are some that are, but I think it's basically a season of exploration and, I mean, winning, of course, but also trying to figure out if one of these young guys, and I mean everybody but Joe, can be their quarterback of the future. And we know that they are poised to draft a quarterback in the first round. I think they should draft a quarterback in the first round next year. So I think because of that, they're not looking at this as a make or break season for this regime.
More audio of that, 92.3thefan.com. You can find it on the free Odyssey app as well when you use the absolutely free rewind function. It's great. You can also still do a coming in hotline that's right next to the listen live button if you want to do that and leave us a voicemail with how much you hated the interview or loved the interview or how much crazy it seems to be that Kevin Stefanski would or wouldn't be on the hot seat. Now, I brought this up to you before. I think at some point there has to be some sort of ramifications. We can't just keep doing this same thing that we've been doing, because Lima, you had an excellent point right before the show that I want to get to everybody at 9:45 about this front office and where it's been or hasn't been really over the last decade, because there's certain members of this front office that have been through a couple of general managers. At some point, the scoreboard's up there and you have to answer for being on the losing end of that. Not just to placate your fans. You know, I could sit here and talk smart football stuff and be, well, you guys don't really know. No, eventually, you guys, it's an entertainment business. You pour your heart and souls into these three teams, and if they can't get that job done, somebody's going to have to answer for it. So it's insulting to say after 6 years, you guys don't know what you're talking about. He should be fine. I think that we could be a little understanding about all this and say, hey, he got his offense ripped out from underneath him yet last year. They had to change coaches who he really liked. They had to change his offensive line coaches, who is arguably the second most important coach that they have other than Kevin. And they hired Boobery to replace him, that they had to basically replace without telling anybody halfway through the year. We've been over that dead corpse a million times. But damn it, there is a laundry list of who I find to be good coaches who have lists a mile long themselves of reasons why they still could have kept their job or why they were sabotaged out of their own job, whether it be self-sabotage or on purpose or whatever. And Kevin could be one of those guys. So to tell fans, see, this is where I hate it, where to tell fans, well, there's no hot seat. Nobody's worried about anything. Don't you worry about anything. You can't worry about anything. Okay, I'll do that. We'll talk Guardians then. We'll do what we've been talking about with the Guardians. I'll come back to you when you take yourself seriously. The whole argument. And I don't want to do that.
Is it a win total? Let me ask you this. A win total, is that what's, like, is there a number? Or
that's what I wanted to ask.
Is it how the young quarterbacks look? Like, is there a way the young quarterbacks could look good and then lose a lot of games?
I'm tired of this being subjective. There has to be something there that is right there. Boom, this is what you're judged by. I mean, ultimately, Tone, we live in a world where you and I are judged by certain things. That I can go subjectively,
well,
whatever.
Yes. Okay, hold
on. We are judged by that.
What's the gauntlet here to start the season? So let's say it's Joe Flacco that starts the season, and everyone has talked about the first six games for, you know, how difficult this is going to be for the Browns, right?
Yeah.
So let's say they go 1-5 in the first six. I'm not saying blown out or anything like that. They go 1-5. They just don't. They don't perform that well. It's Cincinnati, it's Baltimore, it's Green Bay, it's Detroit, it's Minnesota.
You're giving me my whole argument what I've been saying for months, by the way.
Okay, so let's say they go 1-5, 2-4, whatever, and start. Then they go, well, okay, season's over already. At 1-5, most you're thinking the season's over with this roster and everything.
Yeah, I know.
So now you go to one of the young guys. Let's say Pickett's not here anymore. Or let's say it's Pickett that starts out 1-5, 2-4.
Good God.
And Flacco's not here. Now we go to Shador or Gabriel. We'll let the fans decide what makes sense for the argument. Whatever. Let's say they go to one of those guys and they go 500 the rest of the year. Okay? So that's 11 games. All right. So they go 5-6 the rest of the year. That's a 6-11 record for the season. You keeping Kevin Stefanski? In that hypothetical? Because I think that's a hypothetical that is legitimate. If one of the young quarterbacks is decent.
How do we feel at the end of the year? I mean, we kept
what
who?
Did we do when Baker got in finally? And then they went, what, 500 or maybe a little worse the rest of the year? We felt really good.
Yeah, but I didn't feel that great at the end of the year when they kept Eric Mangini because he won 4 in a row. And I felt that we were just rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, but I was at a station that no one was listening to at the time, so nobody gave a damn what I thought. Listen, we can move these things around. None of this is concrete. I think he's got to get the 7 games. I think he's got to get the 7 wins. Give me the 7 wins. You told me before, is the roster, I hate asking a bunch of questions, but here we go. Is the roster worse than what it was last year? Do you believe? Yes, no. Do you believe the roster is worse than what it was last year? Say it. Say what you mean.
Yeah, because I don't know anything about the rookies. Okay. I mean, I like the draft, but no.
So
I think
as of right now,
they got no JOK. They got no Nick Chubb. The offensive line's a year later, and they're
all
old.
A lot of people agree with you. I bet a lot of people agree with you. A lot of people agree. I don't think that means their record's going to be worse than last year because I don't think that there was any effort really in December.
Right. They're trying to lose.
But they do not have a better roster than what they had last year. Okay, that's one reason. The other reason is exactly what you said with the quarterbacks. That's why I think it's imperative to start Joe Flacco because I want to keep the mind in the hearts of the veterans on my football team because I think he's got to reach a certain point to be safe. I don't, even if I didn't like Kevin and Andrew personally, which I do, even if I didn't, because there was one guy I didn't like personally, and that's pretty well known. I don't like changing coaches. I don't like just firing guys. And I really especially hate if we go in halfway through the season and Lyman gives me like a 1-5 scenario and then we switch him out halfway through the year. Because that to me is that now you've really sunk your ship and you shouldn't have done that. Like, I totally agree. Mary Kay is right and I agree with the Browns on this point. They do not start the season off. They are right now not on the hot seat. You are not thinking about firing them guys. Because if you were, you should have done that in January. So that's not a consideration. My whole consideration is this. What do you do after this season? How do I prove that these philosophies work? Because I'm telling you, if this roster ain't that great, which you say it isn't, you get the 7 games with this schedule, you get the 7 wins, somebody's going to have to play well, and then I can make arguments. Then I can tell you. Then I can feel a little bit better about it. We could still be looking for a quarterback. But it's got to make this thing look better for the future of it. Maybe you take your two first-round picks, you move up, get a quarterback. Or you know what? Maybe if you win 7 games, and by what you said, you end up being 500 or just above 500, flip it over to 6-5. You know damn well, Tone, we're going to be talking about Dylan Gabriel or Shador Sanders. and whether or not they deserve to control the offense. I will hope that Cedric Tillman has stepped up then and has become a nice weapon for this football team. Maybe Jamari Thrash becomes a third option. I'm probably wishing in one hand and you know what in the other and all that, but maybe it happens. Quinshon Judkins will have had to have played well. The offensive line will have had to have played well. So, yeah, I want them to be successful because I, even if I didn't like the two guys, I still don't like switching coaches. It's all you're doing is making fans who are angry happy, but I don't know if the new guys coming in are going to be any better. How many times have we switched out guys for worse or just as bad? So many times. So I think that they got to get the 7 wins. And if they don't get the 6, boy, you better have a lot of evidence. In the words of Nick Wilson, you better be ready to show your work to that fan base about why everybody should come back in 2026, because damn it, it's going to start to look the same thing over and over again by that time, especially after you get done saying what you're going to say at 9:45 about certain members of that front office. 216-474-0092. Do you believe that there is a threshold that they have to, a win threshold that they have to reach to be safe? That, and I have a, go with me on this. I have a wild ass theory about the second biggest star in basketball right now in America, and why it might be a good thing for the Cleveland Cavaliers and for Cleveland fans. Ken Carmen, Anthony Lima. Take us with you to work on the free Odyssey app.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday you'll hear us and see us chatting with big name celebrities.
And every Monday you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
We're both pretty pumped up about things getting going here. There's just going to be some really interesting things coming up for this team in training camp and then beyond. And clearly the season's going to be a challenge. But I think that makes it even more intriguing. Again, you get mad at me sometimes because do I expect them to win the Super Bowl? Nope. Do I expect them to win the division? Nope. Do I expect them to make the playoffs? Nope. Can I still find entertainment and be interested in what they're doing? Absolutely. And that's where I am with this football team right now. I also wonder this, and we've kicked it around like crazy, and I find it hard to believe that Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry will be back after this year if they have a bad season. And I know what Jimmy Haslam said about a big swing and a miss at the quarterback. I couldn't agree with him more, and I'm glad he said it because it puts it on the entire organization. But the head coach and the guy who brings in the players, Andy, they have to produce to some level. And I don't expect them to go 3-14. I think they'll be better. But if they go 3-14, I'd be stunned if they're both back. Mary Kay Cabot was on the morning show today with Ken and Anthony. And she talked about those guys, Kevin Stefanski, Andrew Berry, and returning to this team based on circumstances on wins and losses this season. Here's what she had to say.
No, I don't think that anyone is safe no matter what. I mean, there are some that are, but I think it's basically a season of exploration and, I mean, winning, of course, but also trying to figure out if one of these young guys, and I mean everybody but Joe, can be their quarterback of the future. And we know that they are poised to draft a quarterback in the first round. I think they should draft a quarterback in the first round next year. But yeah, so I think because of that, they're not looking at this as a make or break season for this regime.
Do you agree? I would like to agree.
I'm going to tell you this.
I really would.
On July 10th, I agree. How's that sound? I agree with everything she said on July 10th.
Okay.
It just takes one or two things to go sideways during the middle of the season, and then somehow or another, they're like, oh, that was the day they found out that they weren't coming back, or that was the day they realized they are coming back. Most times, though, it's the day they found out they weren't coming back, right? All it takes is one, like there's something that we're not expecting that's going to happen during the season, and it's going to put intense scrutiny on the coaching staff.
I just, I think these guys, I like Kevin Stefanski as a coach. I've not hidden that fact. I've said it since he started here. I think he's a good young coach. Excuse me. And I
hear how emotional you get about it.
I'm all choked up about it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've had people on the show say the same thing, that if he got let go, he'd get hired immediately. And I think he would. I think somebody else would hire him. Andrew Berry has some, you know, draft decisions that have been questionable. Hopefully they're better this year, and hopefully they get some guys who can really produce and do some things, and we'll find out. Mary Kay also talked about, Andy, get ready. Are you set? You sitting down?
Oh, give it to me.
Tight ends.
Yeah.
There you go. David Njoku in particular, who of course is the starting tight end, and they drafted Harold Fannin, who's a, you know, young rookie who caught a ton of balls for Bowling Green last year. But Njoku's situation, Dan, is somewhat interesting here. And Mary Kay commented about contracts and David Njoku with Ken and Anthony.
One they're going to have to look at would be David Njoku. David is looking to rebound from a very uneven year last year. But I did ask Andrew Berry about that at the owners' meetings or somewhere about extending David. That's something that David wants. It's something the Browns want. And so I think we'll see something happen there at some point, not necessarily in training camp or before the season, but I think it's something that both sides want to do. So you can watch for that over the coming months, I would think. And Greg Newsome is someone that they kind of have to make a decision on, because he's in his fifth year option year this year. So they have to decide if he's in their long-term plans.
Should they be?
Yes.
Both?
No. Well, just Njoku, right?
I want Newsome too.
I don't know why I'm hesitant on Newsome, but yeah, I don't have a problem with
it. You know why? Because he's sat down with us and he looks like a football version of Tristan McKenzie. That's why. He's a slight guy to be playing professional football. Yet I think he's good.
I do too.
I love his personality and I love his attitude.
I just think he's one of those players that gets caught in the mix and the next thing you know, they're gone.
Yeah, but see, that's the thing. I don't want him to be.
Yeah, I don't either. But
well, and you know why? Partially because of the way the league has evolved and the position he plays. I think you need good corners. And I think Greg's a good corner. I don't think he's Denzel Ward caliber, but he's a good corner. And I think you need them, and you can't have enough of them. And that's why I would keep him. Now, if you have to pay him out the wazoo and pay him like he's an upper echelon corner, those guys are making buku bucks these days. I don't know if I would do that. But if I'm Greg Newsome in his representation, I don't know if I would hold out for that either. Good contract
I don't know,
and go.
Why do I feel like I just feel like he'll be gone. I don't know why.
You might be right.
Yeah, I don't want to be right, though. That's a problem. The tribulation.
Who'd you rather have, Martin Emerson or Greg Newsome?
Newsome.
Do I have to pick? You just told me I have to.
I believe you are going to have to pick, and I think the Browns are going to have to pick, too.
They'll pick Martin Emerson.
Interesting.
I don't know. Are you walking away from a first-round pick? I mean, I know it's only a year's difference. Does that play into it? Remember the pride they take in their picks. Let's not forget that.
Okay, but Martin Emerson was their find in the third round.
A find, yeah. Well,
at this point, if you have two guys, you're not thinking one's a first and one's a third. You're thinking which one's better, aren't you? After they've been here a while, when it comes to committing to that next contract?
I think it's hard for them to walk away from their own first-round picks. Let me just leave it at that. I think that's the way that it's extreme. I mean, it's hard for them to walk away from a third round pick, let alone a first round pick.
They could have
you're talking about this year. They could have five of their own. Is it five of their own first round picks?
At some point, Andy, you just look at ability and not where they were drafted.
Jeff, I agree with you, but for some reason, I feel like, you know, when we made that stand and made them our first-round pick, well, then pretty amazing they could have five first-round picks starting on this team on a team that traded away all those first-round picks for a quarterback.
You would bring Njoku back and give David a longer contract?
I would, yeah.
I would too.
I think the problem we forget about him too is how old is David now? He's
26.
26, and it feels like he's been here for, you know, forever. That's
because he was here about when he was 20.
Yeah, I think he was even 19 when they drafted him, and he turned 20.
The one thing I think to remember about David, twofold, he is still a young guy, and he has had some moments, but I don't think you're ever going to confuse his level of play for Travis Kelce's, for George Kittle's, for Brock Bowers, what he did as a rookie last year with the Raiders. I don't think David is upper echelon top three, four, five guys at his position in the NFL. But I think he's really close. And I think he has the position, the potential to get even better at the tight end position. And so I would not walk away from him. And if I could have Njoku on a good contract, and you're certainly going to have to pay him, and Fannin, if he pans out, then you could be really solid at the tight end spot. And, you know, if Njoku signs a 2 or 3 year extension and Fannin comes on strong, okay, well, then there's your transition period, is it not? And you know at the end of 2 or 3 years, Fannin will be your guy and David will probably have to go somewhere else to get another contract.
No, that's well said. Yeah, I agree. It still takes me back to that the original question we're talking about here, too, is, you know, how does this affect into the coaching staff?
Well, Sean's in Westlake. Sean?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it. Long-time Bills fan, live in Cleveland now. Thank you for not drafting Josh Allen and Dakin Baker. Really appreciate that.
Sean? Sean?
Can you hear me?
You couldn't have said anything that hurts me more.
Dude, I had my quarterback purgatory for a long time, too. I listen to you guys all the time. Love your show.
Thanks.
I just can't figure out how in God's name anybody in Cleveland wants Andrew Berry making another draft pick. If he has to draft a quarterback next year, that means he failed on Dylan Gabriel and Shadar Sanders again. He already failed on Deshaun Watson. I mean, how many chances does this guy get? It's terrible. You guys have the second worst quarterback situation in the entire NFL. Saints are the only one that are worse. I just don't get it. I mean, I don't understand. He should have been fired last year. Why he even kept his job this year, it boggles
Sean,
my mind.
Sean,
I wouldn't do
Sean,
it.
The owner basically came out and said, the reason we're in this mess is pretty much my fault. When you say swing and a miss, I mean, how many first-round picks did he have to trade away to bring Deshaun Watson in here? So automatically, he's got his hands tied behind his back on whether his draft is going to be good or not. When you don't have a first-round draft pick, you're not going to look good.
And here's the thing about that comment, the big swing and a miss, Andy and Sean. If the owner says that, we took a big swing and a miss, well, that gets somebody fired, doesn't it? Unless it was the owner making the call.
And who made
it? Was Andrew Berry's call. Other quarterbacks.
Well, put it this way. If they were going to draft a quarterback anyway, which is what, you know, most general managers say, you should probably pick a quarterback every year if you can, maybe, if you're in that kind of a situation. Who picked Shador Sanders?
Exactly.
Well,
if you're planning for next year, then why waste two draft picks on guys that you could build your roster out this year? Makes no sense.
Marketing, my friend. Money, my friend.
Hey, Sean. Two things. Thanks for calling. Enjoy Josh Allen.
Have a good one, guys.
All right, Sean. Yeah, we can go to that Bill Super Bowl reunion, same as ours, the championship year. Same as we can go to the Browns one. Right.
That's a cheap shot.
What do you mean?
They've been there.
Well, guess what?
They've been there.
I don't see the trophy.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
He is a local kid. He was a former 92.3 The Fan intern, now Pro Football Talk NFL writer, NBC Sports as well. Miles Simmons joins us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. What's up, buddy? Welcome back to the show.
Oh, hello. Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
We're doing all right here. We're what, 2 weeks away from training camp? And then does that signal the end of summer?
Absolutely, it does. Yes. And so I am very much enjoying the hell out of summer right now. I've been playing college football 26. I got the deluxe edition so I could start playing on Monday. And I don't know if did you guys catch the Valkyries Fever game yesterday? I mean, that was also just a great one to watch. So.
JP, yeah, happened to miss that one, Miles. Didn't pop up on my...
Yeah, did you know? Interesting. You know, just wondering, just a question.
Do you prefer the game above the rim too, like Jonathan Miles?
Did Caitlin Clark play in this one?
I believe she did play. Yeah.
Did she raise her 3-point percentage above 30% in the season in this one, or no?
I don't believe she did. She did have that string of 1-for-18 shooting from three. That's not good. That's not good stuff.
Miles, do you think a David Njoku contract extension makes sense for the Cleveland Browns?
I do, in a lot of ways. I mean, it's one of your core guys at this point that has been on the roster for a while. And so that's why I feel like, especially with this quarterback situation the way it is, we don't know who's going to be the QB1. But, when Joe Flacco was there, the last time in 2023, it was probably the most successful stretch of games that David Njoku has had as a Cleveland Brown. And so because of that, and because of the way we know the offense is going to kind of revert, back to what it was more like in 2023, I think it does make sense to, extend him, lower the cap hit number for this year, and then, just make sure that you're rewarding your guys who have been there and who have contributed. I think that always goes over well in the locker room.
Steelers fans have been upset for about 24 hours after that ESPN ranking using executives and coaches and people across the league that has Myles Garrett number one, TJ Watt number two. If you had a defense of TJ Watt, I don't even know if you do at this point, what's your defense? What would you make it?
Well, I guess part of it is the fact that he finishes plays, right? His sack numbers have been good throughout his entire career. But I think when you ask people around the league and people who know, it's almost like the Aaron Donald effect. Now, obviously, I covered Aaron Donald for most of his career, so that's why I go back to this example. But with Myles Garrett, you have to do everything you can to make sure he does not wreck your day. And sometimes you will see TJ Watt left more on the island, right, with a certain tackle than you will with Myles Garrett. And then you would like a guard or a center with Aaron Donald. It's like the whole universe revolves around him. And that, I think, is the difference between a TJ Watt, who is, I think, undoubtedly an elite pass rusher, right? And then somebody like a Myles Garrett, who is not just an elite pass rusher, but the entire universe has to revolve around him. Otherwise, he will destroy your day. And there are ways that TJ Watt can do that, but I don't think it's exactly the same as somebody like a Myles Garrett.
Miles Simmons in the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. I have gotten some flack for saying I think the Browns are a 3-win team. Now, in fairness, I think their win range is somewhere between 2 wins and 7 wins, but I would weight my expectations well closer to 3, 4, maybe 5 wins than certainly 6 or 7 wins. Where do you, when you start talking about the win range for this Browns team, because you said some things, they're going back to who they used to be. Yeah, good season for David Njoku, Joe Flacco. Where's your win range for this Browns team?
Oh, man. I mean, I think it could be anywhere from what you said, 3 wins. It could be more like 10 wins, right? I don't think that they're a bad team. I think, and this could be my, delusional Cleveland fandom coming out in me. And, I don't really know how to get rid of that. I have tried. But, when you look at what the Browns have done in the past, right, when they have been who they should be under Kevin Stefanski, they're usually successful. Right. And because of that, obviously, we don't know what the quarterback situation is going to look like. But if Joe Flacco is starting and if the run game is good, then there's no reason why the defense shouldn't be demonstratively better because they're not going to be on the field all the time because the offense isn't going 3 and out. Right. So if you have that, yeah. And I know that they're in a division with, Cincinnati, which should be better. Baltimore is still a class of the AFC. The Steelers are always going to be at least, you know, a 9-10 win team. That's going to make it more difficult. But I don't think that the Browns are going to be the worst team in the National Football League this year. I just don't. And like I said, that could be my Cleveland fan delusion just coming out. But I would say they're probably more like a 6-7 win team. Right. And anything above that would surprise me a little bit more. But I feel like 6-7 wins is realistic at this point.
Does Stefanski enter the season on the hot seat?
I thought I saw Mary Kay said that he wasn't, and I believe her. I don't necessarily think that he should be, given the results that we've seen when the team is right. You know, I think everything related to number four kind of got everything off the rails last year, right? And so if we were looking at that season thinking, man, this team should be better, it should be, you know, continuing to ascend, and you have an offense that doesn't work because the quarterback is not right, you know, then that's really what derailed the season, in my opinion. So I don't know if you really can blame Stefanski for that when you were trying to do everything you could to make number four successful and it just was never going to happen. And so they seem to be invested. They, by meaning the Haslams and the Browns generally, seem to be invested in Kevin Stefanski being successful and Andrew Berry being successful. I think that makes sense, given that this has obviously been clearly the most successful regime that the Browns have had since they came back in 1999. Now, the bar is almost in hell for that, and I realize that. But, you know, when you've had two playoff appearances, you won a playoff game. It's not like Kevin Stefanski has forgotten how to coach. And I don't know if things go completely off the rails and they do end up at a 2-3 win team, then I could certainly see the Browns making changes. But I don't think that his coaching or his performance in coaching warrants that at this point when we're going into the season thinking, man, you know, Stefanski's got to be on the hot seat. I don't think so.
Miles, the TJ Watt contract standoff with the Pittsburgh Steelers looks to have gotten especially uncomfortable over the summer. Do you think there's any way he doesn't suit up for them week one for the Pittsburgh Steelers?
I think that they saw that. You know, I think it is kind of funny that, you know, the Browns signed Myles Garrett and then two of your three division rivals end up with contract disputes with their best edge rushers. I think, you know, that may be an unintended benefit for what the Browns did with Myles Garrett and not letting him walk out the door with a trade, but instead signing him to such a big extension. But I tend to think that, yes, the Steelers and TJ Watt will work things out because you don't sign Aaron Rodgers, right? You don't go trade for DK Metcalf and then have a team that's supposed to be a contender and then, you know, fool around with your best edge rusher in his contract. Like, this is a time in the NFL, like right now, usually where people are on vacation, right? And so we don't necessarily hear things about extensions and all of that. Now, the Steelers obviously got some stuff done last week on the 4th of July. With the trade and then announcing that they extended Omar Khan. But generally, like, folks are taking a little bit of time off. Training camp comes, things ramp up. We'll see if TJ Watt ends up being in some sort of hold-in situation. But I just feel like the Steelers are a pretty serious football organization, and they're going to be able to get something done with a player that is really pretty critical to their success. That's not something you want to mess around with going into a season where it's Aaron Rodgers' swan song, and you want to do everything you can to become an actual contender. With TJ Watt and a contract dispute being a distraction does not help you do that.
Any problem with a member of the Rooney family, even if he's not directly tied to the Steelers, and Patrick Rooney going out and saying paying Watt would be ridiculous?
I think that that's not something that probably other Rooney family members liked, you know, like, because when that happens, that's not, you know, helpful to the whole negotiation process, right? You want to keep the vibe good between the organization and the player, even if there is a contract dispute. And I think that there are certainly ways that you can do that. That's not entirely helpful from that standpoint, but, you know, as a Cleveland guy, I know, you know, that's not, maybe that's not so bad.
Miles, by the way, there's like 150 Rooneys right now, just from one branch of them. So you can't keep them all in line. Yeah. I think we all know that. I know you're a huge Guardians fan. You tweet about them. You do rage tweet occasionally when things aren't going well. They are back within shouting distance of a wild card spot. They got four against the White Sox. The sweep is well within potential expectations here after the last three games. And yet, they are the hottest team in baseball when it's talking about trading players. Are you okay trading Emmanuel Clase, even if you are within shouting distance of a wild card spot this year?
Yes, because they are not a serious World Series contender. I mean, half the team can't bat. I mean, what has happened to the game I love? You got all these people batting under 200, and they're still in a major league lineup. What is going on, man? Why can't people hit?
Pitching's too good, Miles.
I don't know.
Pitching's gotten to a spot. Yeah, pitching's gotten to a spot where they're too good. Think about it.
Other teams don't have that problem.
Have you watched? No, I'm just talking like league wide though. Like if you watch like Miz on in Milwaukee, he's got his slider that goes 97. Like we're just at a spot right now in the game where they're able to make the ball dance in a certain way that they've never seen before, and with the speed and the velocity, like pitchers are too good.
But that's not when like half your lineup practically is batting under 200 still. Like I don't see that, man. Like I understand what you're saying that pitching is good, but there's a point where you can still bat over 200 and you can still be competitive, right? Like that, I think that's more of the problem with the Guardians than it is like, oh man, pitching is just too good. And I watch plenty of baseball because I work from home, so like I like putting baseball on in the background. Hell, I'm watching the Cubs and the Twins right now. But the Cubs just scored 8 runs, right? And now their closer is out here throwing 100 miles an hour, probably trying to get out of this game. But like, I still feel like there is a way where you can hit over 200. And that, to me, is the bigger problem. And so if you have that, and then, yes, you're talking about trading Class A, you can do that because your offense is not going to be serious enough in a postseason situation where you can move on and potentially be a World Series team. What drives me nuts, guys, is just the fact that you went to the ALCS and then got worse, right? You trade away Josh Naylor, and I can understand that. You trade away Andreas Giménez, but you don't replace those players with people who can have the kinds of seasons that they had, whether it's defensively or offensively. And so that's the thing that like really irks me about the Guardians right now, is that you went to the ALCS, right? You were a series away from playing for the big one, and you didn't go out and improve the team. You got demonstratively worse. And then it's like, oh, man, what? Oh no, people are mad at us because we won't call up the guy. Well, like, if you're not going to call up people, then you have to be able to field a team that's going to be competitive. And that, to me, is the issue. So I don't have a problem if they trade Class A. As long as they get prospects back, they're actually going to, you know, be able to contribute at the major league level sooner than later. And we won't know that. Obviously, it's baseball. But that's why the front office has a high-paying job, and we don't.
By the way, in that Twins-Cubs game you're watching, No one's batting above 300 in either lineup. But this is
how many are batting above 200?
A decent amount of them.
I'd say 300, JP.
A decent amount of them. Okay, but look at the final. Okay, Shaw, who's batting last in the lineup, is 200 on the dot for the Cubs this year. Like you have all sorts of guys that are not 224 for Ian Happ to bat leadoff in this game. Like
there's your two hitter.
There's a lot of your two hitter. All right, on the other side on Minnesota, because I clicked over there. Kyle Tucker's your two hitter for Chicago. It's one of the best hitters in baseball. He's hitting 284. The problem here, and on the Twins side, their two hitters batting 250. They got a guy batting 205. They got a guy batting 206. They got a guy batting they had a pinch hitter who's batting 101. So we do have a guy under 200. Anyway, it's littered all throughout these things. First off, the big problem is you guys looking at batting average is the reason for why you think a player is or isn't good.
But is the offense good for the Guardians?
No, it's not with the defense there. I'm not trying to make a defense for the Guardians. I thought you were talking big picture baseball as to why you see so many just crappy batting averages right now. And I think the big picture response is that the game with the pitchers are just so much better than what the hitters are right now.
And I agree with that. I do agree with that aspect. And you're not wrong. But my point is, if you can't bat over 200, then I don't like that. And I'm not using batting average as the be-all, end-all. But like, you have to get a hit at some point, right? You have to be able to drive a damn run in. So that's why I think if you can't hit over 200, you're not playing the caliber of Major League Baseball that you need to play. That's all I'm saying. You know, on base percentage, you know, OPS, sluggings, all these different things. But if you can't bat over 200, you're not playing baseball at a Major League level.
No, Guardians offense stinks. There's no defense of that, Miles.
All right, Miles, real quick here, because we got about 60 seconds. Cleveland is getting a Great. Superman statue that will be unveiled here. It's not just because of the movie, but because of the fact that Superman was created here in Cleveland. But I will ask you, does the movie have to be good, this new Superman, for you to embrace the Superman statue? Or if it stinks, will it sully the statue?
I don't think it sullies the statue. Superman has a long storied history, and it was created in Cleveland. Absolutely not.
What if
not.
It looks like Dwayne Wade's statue?
Okay, well, that's also true. Hmm. Does the statue look good or not, right? That, to me, is a bigger deal than is the movie good or not. I will go see the movie, though. I got to support Cleveland in some way.
I have heard good things from Mac Robinson. Our board op has actually seen it, and he raves about it. A few other friends have as well. Miles, great stuff, buddy. Appreciate your time.
All right, guys. Take care.
Appreciate you there. Big WNBA fan there, Miles Simmons, on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. We will get into his answers on the Cleveland Browns and the Superman statue coming to Cleveland in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
She's out in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, my friends. Hello, Mary Kay.
Hello, guys. How you doing?
We're doing wonderful. Have you seen any moose?
I haven't seen a moose yet. I have seen some elk, but looking forward to seeing a moose. Going to Yellowstone today, actually.
Ooh. Yeah, so what went into the planning of, like, what were the other options? Ooh. What made you choose this location?
This is fun.
Well, my lifelong best friend, we were at St. Clements in Lakewood together when we were, you know, little grade schooler girls. She has a lovely townhome out here, so... This is a girls trip. I'm with four friends, my besties. We've been together forever, and we're having a grand old time.
Will they stop annoying you with football questions about Shador Sanders?
You know, that is a funny phenomenon. Whenever I go out with my friends, they always come home and their husbands want to know everything that we talked about regarding the Browns. And they got nothing. they've got nothing to tell when we come home. We do not talk about the Browns.
Mary Kay Cabot. Well, she's talking about the Browns with us right now, and we're very blessed for you to be talking to us right now while you are on your vacation. So, Mary Kay, let me get down to the business here. You've penned a couple of posts about Kenny Pickett and the reasons he would win the starting job, and Joe Flacco and the reasons he can win, or the ways he can win the starting job there. So what are the ways, you know, and you wrote about this in Cleveland.com, but what are the ways that Joe Flacco could win that starting job week one?
Well, with Joe Flacco, the thing about Joe is you get the explosive plays. We all know that. We've all seen that. The drawback is that he also gives the ball away. So if you're going to go with Joe Flacco, you're going to have to know that you're going to have less quarterback movement. So you can't be quite as creative with some of the things that you do or would want to do in terms of quarterback keepers, RPOs, and some of those kinds of things. But what you will get are those explosive plays, those big chunk plays. So you have to weigh that against some of the drawbacks. And then with Kenny, it's kind of the opposite. Kenny brings the movement skills. Kenny brings the mobility. You can do some creative things with him from a movement standpoint. But what you might not get very much of are the explosive plays. Kenny had 13 touchdown passes in his 24 starts with the Steelers. Joe had 13 touchdown passes in his 5 starts with the Browns. So as they move through the preseason and these games and practices and joint practices, they're going to have to figure out what is the trade-off? What are you willing to give up? What are you willing to get? Because it will be a very different experience with both of them.
Mary Kay, it's still very early in the process, but as you've gotten to talk and report on any of the four quarterbacks here, is there any ranking or anything in terms of like who thinks they should start? Like, are you, when you're talking to Joe Flacco or Dylan Gabriel, or are any of them just assuming, yes, I will be the starter when all is said and done here?
Well, I think Kenny came in really believing and feeling as though this was his opportunity to seize the moment. And I think the Browns gave him the indication and the feeling that this could be his job if he could just go out there in preseason and really show out really well and bring some of the things that he learned from Kellen Moore in Philadelphia, some of the things that he picked up from Jalen Hurts, and kind of go out there and be their sort of version of a Sam Darnold or someone who needed another chance in a nice environment with a good supporting cast. So I do think that there was sort of I think Kenny Pickett came in with the edge. But then it's really, really difficult to overlook what Joe brings to the table. And Joe, it's not that he knocked it out of the park every single day in spring practices, but because he didn't even practice as much as the other guys. He didn't get as many reps. He didn't need them. And he doesn't need them in training camp either. But you just know what Joe brings to the table. And also, you have veterans who know what Joe did for them in 2023. And someone wrote last week that I said that veterans such as Myles Garrett want him to start week one, or I don't know what it was. I wrote that Myles and some of the veterans support Joe. I never said that they're calling for him to start week one or that they want him to even start week one. But he does have the support of some of the guys who saw firsthand what he could do in 2023.
Mary Kay Cabot with us while on vacation discussing the Browns. So the story popped out. We'll get back to the Browns in a second here. But a big story over the last few weeks about this collusion between the NFLPA, the NFL, the owners, the NFLPA signing off on it, but not telling their members. And some interesting Browns attachments here. One, obviously, Deshaun Watson. This all started after he got his guaranteed contract. But also J.C. Treader. On the other hand, was heavily involved. What do you make of all of this? And what do you think the Haslams think about how, you know, they became the reason that you had this collusion to begin with?
Well, I think the Haslams and the whole Browns front office, I think that they don't have any qualms about the fact that they gave Deshaun Watson a fully guaranteed contract. I think they believed, and maybe some others in the league believed, that there would be more after that, not just the rookies, but some of those high priced contracts. And it never really did happen. So it does look somewhat suspicious. Now I'm seeing that there are conflicts of interest potentially with Lloyd Howell, the head of the NFLPA. So I think this is going to drag on for a while. I think this is a story that is going to have many layers. And like you said, it was inspired by that infamous Deshaun Watson contract which the Browns won't be getting out from under until after next season.
Mary Kay Cabot with us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. I know you were asked about wide receivers a couple of days ago. Could the Browns at all be in the market for any of those guys like Terry McLaurin? I know there's not Browns rumors or anything like that about Tyreek Hill, but are they in the conversation for anybody right now?
I don't think that they are really clamoring after a big high-priced receiver right now. I just don't see that in the budget. It doesn't mean, I always say never, because if something presents itself and it makes a lot of sense long-term and the guy is the right age and it fits into your culture and all of those things, and most importantly right now, your budget, then of course you might toss your hat into the ring for something like that. But I did not get the sense coming out of spring ball that they were looking to add someone like that. And one of the reasons for that is because they will be, a heavy 12 personnel, two tight end offense this season, and they don't need all that many receivers. There will be times when there will only be one receiver on the field, and plenty of times too, but not three, as many as there were last year. And I've always been of the mind that you can't have too many good receivers, so I would be out collecting as many as I could get. That's just how I kind of roll with the whole receiver piece. But I don't think they're necessarily looking at it like that, at least not this year. I think the year that they would go out and find themselves another sort of big-time or big-money receiver would probably be next year.
You mentioned contracts. Who's like the next guy that they'd be in the market to sign? I mean, I know they had one of the most expensive offenses for the last few years. Whether that translated on the field, I mean, obviously that was a mixed bag. But now that they're, you know, Nick Chubb's no longer here, Denzel Ward, where's his contract status at? I don't know if we're talking about extensions or anything. I know JOK's future sadly kind of up in the air. What are some of the investments they might be willing to make here with their own players here over the next year?
Well, I think one they're going to have to look at would be David Njoku. And David is looking to rebound from a very uneven year last year. But I did ask Andrew Berry about that at the owners' meetings or somewhere about extending David. And he basically said that David, that's something that David wants. It's something the Browns want. And so I think we'll see something happen there at some point, not necessarily in training camp or before the season, but I think it's something that both sides want to do. So you can watch for that over the coming months, I would think. And Greg Newsom is someone that they kind of have to make a decision on because he's in his fifth year option year this year. So they have to decide if he's in their long-term plans.
Is there any philosophy they have, or is it just kind of, hey, each case is given as it goes, considering like so much more money was spent offensively at times, defensively at times, or is it just how that works out?
It's just how it works out. I mean, they have a plan. As I mentioned before, right now, spending big time on a wide receiver, I don't think that's in the plans. Again, they can always pivot on that, but the philosophy, of course, this year is to kind of return to the Kevin Stefanski offense. So they're emphasizing, again, not only two tight ends, but three tight ends at times. And the running game is going to be back in full force. So those are the areas where they committed more resources, more draft picks than they did in the receiving core right now. And, of course, they brought Deontay Johnson on board, but he's going to really have to come out there in training camp and prove that he deserves this job. So that will be an interesting thing to watch.
Every week, it would seem, there is a new email that we get from a sports book about odds for various things, but always the head coach and who's on the hot seat. Kevin Stefanski had the fourth highest odds of being the first coach fired, if that makes any sense. Does that surprise you?
It does. I mean, when you just look at it from the outside looking in, I could see why people might feel that way. But if you really understand and know what this team is doing right now, then I think you can kind of remove him from the hot seat this year for the most part. And that is because even at the owners' meetings, Jimmy basically said, it's not that he's giving Andrew and Kevin any kind of a pass for this season by any stretch, but by the same token, they're looking at this as a two-year plan to find their quarterback of the future. If they found him in this bunch, that's great. If they didn't, they're looking at next year to get their QB of the future. And you show me an NFL coach who has won consistently without a good starting quarterback, and the list has to be very small. So I think they want to see what Kevin can do once he has his quarterback of the future. I don't think that he's on the hot seat right now.
I was going to do whoa, but hold on. I think Lime still wants to do whoa. You want to do it?
Well, then again, at the end, she reinforced what she was saying.
Is he safe no matter what this year then?
No, I don't think that anyone is safe no matter what. I mean, there are some that are, but I think it's basically a season of exploration and, I mean, winning, of course, but also trying to figure out if one of these young guys, and I mean everybody but Joe, can be their quarterback of the future. And we know that they are poised to draft a quarterback in the first round. I think they should draft a quarterback in the first round next year. So I think because of that, they're not looking at this as a make or break season for this regime.
For Miles, I mean, do you hear a lot of conversations with fans about the difference between Miles Garrett and TJ Watt? Because, I mean, I've actually had assistant coaches at high school football games damn near accost me over TJ Watt and Miles Garrett. They happen to be Steelers fans. Not going to mention any names. They were assistants. Do you get a lot of conversation about that? Because I think that Miles Garrett kind of shows you the difference in what fans care about, what we care about in the media, and then what executives and guys who are actually in the NFL care about Mary Kay, because he's consistently now ranked above TJ Watt, even though we always talk about TJ Watt's sacks.
Well, once again, it's basically pick your poison. They do play different positions in different ways. I mean, you're going to get some more of those big plays in terms of batted passes, forced fumbles, and things like that from TJ, things that Miles doesn't necessarily do from that end position. But I think both are equally disruptive, and I think it would be very difficult to necessarily pick one over the other. But I think Miles is generally regarded as the best pure edge rusher in the NFL, so I would stick with that.
What is on the docket for later today? What are you doing in Jackson Hole?
Going to Yellowstone today.
Oh, yeah, so that's right. I forgot.
Looking forward to that. I've never been there. So, and last night we took a gondola to the top of the mountain, and it was pretty phenomenal. It's absolutely beautiful out here. Have you guys ever been?
No, goodness gracious, no.
It's absolutely unbelievable. So very excited to be here.
Mary Kay, we wish you well. Hope you have a lot of fun. Hope you get to see a lot of cool stuff. And we'll talk to you again very soon. All the best.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Mary Kay Cabot, live from Wyoming.
Where would she have flown into?
Let's get a little bit more perspective on what's going on from ESPN, FDN Fantasy. Aaron Schatz is on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Aaron, thanks a million for joining us. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm good, man. It's been a busy off season, but I'm ready to get started.
It's almost over, my friend. We're almost there. I'm ready for camp, and I'm ready for some football on all levels. But, you know, obviously it's a year for the Browns that we're waiting to see what happens. And, you know, can they pull off a miracle and be something that everybody thinks they're not? Who knows? They've got four quarterbacks to go into this thing. So let me start with that question. Do you think the Browns can go into the regular season with four quarterbacks on the roster?
No, I don't think they're going to go with four quarterbacks on the roster. My guess is, my guess is that whoever loses the job between Pickett and Flacco, they might try to flip somewhere else and keep both rookies. Because it doesn't make sense to use the draft picks on the rookies and then not keep both of them. But Sanders is a fifth, so I suppose you could try to drop him to the practice squad. I can't imagine they're going to do four quarterbacks.
Which guy get, and I say this, obviously, to me, the answer, Aaron, is whichever guy doesn't play the best. But are you thinking you're keeping two rookies or are you keeping two veterans? Because it clearly is going to come down that way. I don't know how you give up on the rookies if you think either one of them has any chance of playing down the road. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you completely. Well, it's hard for me to put myself in the Browns' brain because I would never have really drafted Dillard Gabriel. Like, that was a surprise to a lot of people, and it was a surprise to me. But clearly they see something in him. They took him in the third round. So I see something in Sanders. So I would think you would want to keep both of them. So, yeah, I would think the best thing for them to do is whichever veteran doesn't win the camp battle, they either try to flip to a team that's had an injury or they cut. But I don't know if that's what they're going to do. It sort of depends on what the two rookies show. It's very difficult to imagine a world where they cut Gabriel. You just don't cut third round picks. You don't send them to the practice squad. They make the team. But it sort of depends on what Sanders does to see whether they keep him.
Aaron, size up the AFC North for me. Pittsburgh's in a weird spot. I mean, I would just, you know, here they are. They've got a quarterback that's been successful throughout his career, with the exception, the New Yorkers will probably argue with me on that. But, you look at what Pittsburgh is, and we already know what Baltimore, and you have to respect the you-know-what out of Cincinnati's quarterback situation.
Well, our numbers love Baltimore. Baltimore was our number one team the last 2 years. So our numbers think Baltimore is fabulous. Doesn't see a particular reason why they failed in the playoffs. They've just played against good teams and had things not quite go their way. And it's not like they've gotten clobbered in the playoffs or anything like that. So Baltimore looks very strong. Cincinnati obviously has a great offense and questionable defense. Pittsburgh, yeah, like you said, I'm just not a Rodgers believer. He did not play well. And it's not like they didn't give him good receivers. He had Garrett Wilson and Devontae Adams, and he had a reasonable offensive line. So I think the problem is that Rodgers just doesn't have it anymore, and we see their defense actually taking a little bit of a step back.
Aaron, if you're the Browns and you go into training camp and you have Jerry Jeudy at wide receiver and then nothing but question marks, what are you thinking? Is that okay from your perspective, and the way that you study the NFL?
Dude, look at a lot of things about this team that are not okay, right? I mean, I think the first thing is I think the Browns are in this mindset, which is it's not going to happen this year. We're building for the future. So what we need to do is get young players some playing time and figure out what they can be. What can Cedric Tillman be? What can, I don't know, Jamari Thrash be? But they don't have a lot of those receivers that are young that they can see what they are going to be. Tillman's in his third year. Thrash is in his second. So, I mean, we know Jeudy, right? He's, you know, really good. What can Fannin be, right, at tight end? I think their defense is going to be very good. There is a lot of talent on this defense. There's a very good defensive coordinator. There's a very strong chance of a rebound. We know they were very good 2 years ago. What happened last year was, I mean, first of all, they don't get that much pressure outside of a Garrett, and Mason Graham should help with that a lot. The other is the secondary did not play well last year. But secondary performance is very inconsistent. And the secondary had played well the year before. So it's, you know, it's definitely possible that Ward, Emerson, Newsom, those guys all bounce back this year. And that this defense is pretty good. The problem is that the offense looks awful.
It's funny because a lot of things you said that I've kind of thought, and it's like, okay, if they want to get young, give young guys a chance and start grooming towards the future, that this is an opportunity. And then Myles Garrett says, hey, I want to go. And then they figure out a way to get him to stay. Is that kind of not a conflict of interest, but it takes two philosophies and kind of takes them in different ways where they could have got a giant haul for Myles if they wanted to trade him. No one here wanted to see him trade him, but if you were truly planning for the future, would you have not traded him?
The problem is Garrett is so good that in 2 or 3 years, he's still going probably to be that good. It's not like you're trading a guy who in 2 or 3 years is going to decline for a bunch of stuff. You're trading a guy who in 2 or 3 years is probably going to still be one of the top 2 or 3 defensive players in the league for a bunch of stuff. So I see the reason to keep him, and I've got to think that Garrett knows that as much as he said he wanted to play for a winner, that it's not happening this year. They probably gave him assurances about building and what they think they can do in 2026. But it's not happening. It's not happening this year. And I think he knows that.
How do guys balance the idea, Aaron, when they throw out, like Myles Garrett, that, you know, I want to play for championships and everything else, which is, you know, that sounds great. And then the reality strikes and you get dangled ungodly money in front of you. To me, there's no question. In that sport, you take the money. Do you not? I think the words ring hollow most of the time.
It's hard for me to know. I've never had that money dangled in front of me.
Hey, join our club.
Have it happen, and I have a feeling I would take it if it was there. I think when you get older, when you're in your early 30s, mid-30s in the NFL, then if you've never won, you go ring chasing. Then you sign with good teams. You know, DeAndre Hopkins signing with Baltimore, that kind of thing, maybe for a little less money for the chance for a ring. When you're in your prime, like Garrett is, you get all the money you can get, and that's what he did.
Aaron, if you're Kevin Stefanski and you're looking at this, again, I talk about like these tug-of-war conversations you might have. Like if you're the Browns and you think, oh, we're going to be a fourth-place team and we're really looking for the future, we want to figure out who our quarterback is, do we not want to have to maybe combine our two first-round picks next year to have to go get a quarterback in the draft? If you're Kevin, like, and the ownership has been good to him, I mean, I don't know if there's every team in the league would have kept him for this season and kept everyone there. How many wins does he need to get to keep his job, or what does he need to do? Is it just a matter of showing improvement and showing that the team won't quit? I think Kevin's in a really weird spot this year.
I think showing that the team won't quit is a good one. Listen, if they were to get rid of Stefanski, he would get hired by another team.
Yes.
Everyone in the league has a lot of respect for him. I don't think anybody looks at the situation in Cleveland and thinks that this is his fault. I think you can blame ownership. I think you can blame management. I think you can look at players that have not developed. But I don't think anybody looks at it and goes, oh, Stefanski is the reason why those players have not developed. Stefanski is the reason why this is. Stefanski made the Watson trade. Like, nobody thinks those things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's, like, very well respected. So if they have a bad season and he is the scapegoat, I think they'll regret it.
Interesting.
With that thought in mind, do you think they're on the clock? Do you think he's on the clock? Is Andrew Berry on the clock? And are they a package deal?
I mean, if you're going to try to restart the organization, you restart the organization. I have a lot of respect for Andrew Berry and the front office. And I think that the Watson trade, first of all, look, you know, at the time, he looked like a very good quarterback.
Yeah,
and
you're right.
Also, the order probably came from up high. You know, that a trade like that, Haslam's got to okay that. That's not Barry's doing. So, I wouldn't look at where this team is and be like, oh, the problem is the management. But I would understand why they would feel like they need to get a fresh start if this season goes really, really badly. Now, here's the thing. If the defense does what I think it's going to do, then I think they'll be able to come out of this season feeling like, okay, well, our defense, you know, that blip in 2024 was a blip. This is still a really good defense. Our coaching staff knows what it's doing. Either we've figured out we have something in Gabriel, or we've figured out we have something in Sanders, or let's go get a quarterback.
Aaron, I do think one of the things fans here are excited about is the running back situation. And, yeah, we lost Nick Chubb, and fans are still bummed out about that. But I think, you know, when you bring in a Buckeye, you're probably not hurting yourself at running back here in Cleveland. So the fans will enjoy that, too. Quinshon Judkins and Dylan Sampson, this does seem like it could be a pair that could be around here for a long time. It could be pretty fun. When you look at a season of maybe not pessimism, but just not having gigantic hopes, I think those two guys could have a long future. Just your thoughts on them and what their impact could be on this team.
I mean, I'm an analytics guy. We never get excited about running backs. I don't, you know, I look at them and I'm like, oh,
I'm going to send
hey,
you
look,
a bowl of sugar or something just to get you hyped up on this.
Running backs.
Yeah.
Like, yay, good. That's not, I mean, you know, are they nice running back? Listen, the reason why we never get excited about running backs is not that these men do not have a lot of talent and work ethic. It's that there's too many of them that have talent and work ethic. Look, the Browns just got two of them. I mean, there's too many good. The problem with running backs is that there's too many good running backs. And so I'm sure these are good running backs, but I don't feel like either of them is going to have the, you know, neither of them's Ashton Jeanty, right? Ashton Jeanty's the guy who everyone feels like what he can do before contact is so good that he can overcome a bad offensive line. Not saying that the Browns have a bad offensive line, because they have a good offensive line. But these running backs don't seem like they move the needle that much, but they also don't move it backwards. They seem like they're good running backs.
Aaron, will the Browns grow to regret trading Travis Hunter?
Oh, man, isn't that a great question? Because who knows? Yeah, that is one of the great, I mean, that is one of the great unknowns. If Travis Hunter is a one-way player, then they absolutely made the right trade. Because they got so much value for that pick, right? The odds that Travis Hunter as a one-way player is that much more valuable than Mason Graham, that he's worth all the picks they got in addition, is just near impossible. But if Hunter can do this two-way thing and is super special, then we have to have a conversation about it. But I absolutely understand why they made the trade. And Mason Graham is a pretty darn good player.
I got to ask you a fantasy question while I got here, too. Is there anybody on that Browns roster that you look at and say, okay, that's a guy I would pick, and I would pick him relatively. I'm not saying first round in your own personal draft. But is there anybody that excites you on that? I know analytics, but give me the one guy
he's scraping
you would draft on this from a fantasy perspective.
I use my analytics for fantasy football purposes, too. So,
yes.
The answer is no. And it's not, you know, Jerry Jeudy on another team, it would be a different answer. But on this team with these quarterbacks, it's just hard to see him as someone you draft early. In your fantasy league and at running back, it's not like Judkins is like an absolute workhorse. You know they're going to share the role among all of them. And Njoku's not one of the earlier tight ends to go. So, no, there's nobody from a fantasy perspective that is really exciting.
All right. I'm not going to be emotional. Every game's at 1 o'clock on Sunday. They have one 9:30 a.m. game, and now no one's worth drafting in my fantasy draft. I'm done. Season's over.
You have to be in, like, leagues with weird rules.
I'm
and
good
then
with that.
Guys will become drafting, like, you know, the cat return yards or something, and then you get DeAndre Carter. I don't know.
All right, tell me about the FTN Football Almanac that's coming out on July 14th. What am I getting there?
Yeah, this is our book, man. It's available for pre-sale right now at ftnfantasy.com/almanac. And if you buy it before it comes out on Monday, you save $5, the chapters on all 32 teams, all of the fantasy projections, comments about all the skill players, you know, all of our usual wit, all of our usual analysis. You know, there are some surprising projections. There's some less surprising projections. There's a lot of interesting content in there about last year and a lot of interesting content about the year to come. FTN Football Almanac, go to ftnfantasy.com/almanac. To pre-order it. It'll also be on Amazon in about a week and a half.
Aaron, thank you so much, and thanks for making it fun. We appreciate you.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Hi, JP. How you doing?
We call them magic squares around these parts now.
Yeah, he brought in some magic squares that Grandma made. Anthony Elan did.
Yeah, former nun. You know, good person.
Former nun.
Well, I mean, that does imply that there's a reason why she stopped being a nun.
That doesn't mean she's not a good person, by the way, but she's just not a nun.
What did happen there? Actually, you know what? If there's anybody I want to interview now, I want to interview Anthony's grandma.
I thought you were going to say grandpa, because that would not work out.
No, that one's not going to happen now, unfortunately and sadly. And that's why there was an overflow of these Magic Square cookies and brownies that were around, and here we are.
And can we just say Magic Square cookies, brownies, brookies, whatever the hell they are, because I haven't actually looked at them.
I think they're more like a brownie type thing.
Okay, because they look kind of like a brookie, like a brownie cookie.
I didn't even know that was named for a thing, but I like it.
They're only grandmas can get away with calling it that, and for me to be like, hell yeah, let's do this. So only like if your dad made magic something, I'm like, so there's ganja in there? Like,
well, there should be at that point.
But the magic ingredient for grandmas making magic squares, the magic ingredient's love.
It's love. Yeah.
And a little extra vanilla and a bit of sugar.
And a lot of sugar.
And probably a little bit of brown sugar, which always throws people off. They're like, it's sugar, but it's
nothing that's
brown
healthy.
Sugar.
People are like, oh, why does grandma make the best treats? It's because they put nothing healthy that's in it.
Yeah, you know why? Because when they started learning to bake 70 years ago, we didn't know about the perils of cholesterol. I mean, we did. We just didn't talk about it or think about it until you dropped dead from a heart attack. But
thank you, Atkins Diet.
I will say, grandmas get it right. So Anthony Elant, he is obviously part of our tree, but Anthony Elant's grandma.
Well, you're applauding the cookie or the brookie or whatever we're calling it. I did have one. I thought it was great. Did everyone else partake in having this?
I did not. I cannot have sugar right now.
Can't have sugar right now. Mac, did you have any of Anthony Elant's?
I did not.
No. Okay.
Like, Mac, you kind of dereliction of duty there. This feels like, because your boy can't have it right now, you kind of got to be the guy that picks up the slack for my fatness.
I mean, I feel like, so you know me, I turned down basically every food that is offered on that table. But even I was like, well, his former nun of a grandma made brookies. I got to eat this.
Let me ask you, was it?
I wasn't hungry. I just had to eat it.
Was the word magic, was it the kicker? As soon as you heard magic, you're like, I got to.
It does fall into my principles. So anytime I see a sign that says world's best or like best in city, anytime I see that sign, I have to try whatever that food is. That's just an automatic for me. It doesn't always work out to be the very best. No, but if you put up a sign that proclaims to be the very best, 11 times out of 10, I got to try that thing.
I feel like
that type of advertising works on me all the time.
I'm a little worried about you right now.
No, you shouldn't be.
You're gonna get sick at some point.
I love to see what people think they're the very best at. And then I like to judge appropriately.
Do you then like to go up to them and be like, it was fine? It's not world best.
No, I don't like to hurt feelings, but if I had, I could have been like a food critic and been able to write the reviews and be that brutally honest about it. You know, I could. Part of why I think I enjoy what we do so much is that it just lets me be as unfiltered and as cruel sometimes and sometimes nice.
You would think,
as I never need to be.
You would think Nick Wilson would be a great food critic because he's fat. The problem is I just like all food. So everything would be at worst a B minus all the way to like an A plus. I'd have to add like pluses on the A's because I just, There's very few times I've ever been to any place ever and I've been like, this isn't good.
So most places, though, they do have something that they're the very best at, or at least they think that they're the very best at. And when you proclaim yourself to be that, I got to find out whether or not that's true.
So we've got plenty to get to. I do want to know, 216-474-0092. Anik Wilson says, at J. Peterlin on social media. Social media reactions on X, powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. We ask you this. If you see something proclaims itself as the world best at something, does that mean does that make you more likely to try it? I feel like we're just playing a little too fast and loose here to... I think a lot of people lie when they say world's best.
And I have to find out if they're lying or not. That's the intrigue. They get me.
So
the advertising gets me.
As we are within 2 weeks of Browns training camp here, or 2 weeks of rookies the reporting, and then obviously the veterans come a few days after that, we are in this like, okay, are the Browns going to do anything? And that can be a trade. We talked about Terry McLaurin earlier this week after Baskin and Phelps brought it up. We also have talked about different extensions. You know me, I'm on the record at saying, Wyatt Teller's 30, let's go ahead and let him finish his career here. It doesn't look like that's going to happen, but that's where I'd go if you wanted to go ahead and start moving some money around. Mary Kay Cabot was on with the Morning Boys today, and she talked about an extension that could happen here in the next 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, and I was a little surprised to hear this.
One they're going to have to look at would be David Njoku, and David is looking to rebound from a very uneven year last year. But I did ask Andrew Berry about that at the owners' meetings or somewhere about extending David, and he basically said that that's something that David wants. It's something the Browns want. And so I think we'll see something happen there at some point, not necessarily in training camp or before the season, but I think it's something that both sides want to do. So you can watch for that over the coming months, I would think.
Now, this is prescient because David turned 29 today. So happy birthday, David. We know you're listening. P1 of the show. Only afternoon drive. He'll occasionally listen to the Morning Boys, sporadically listen to Middays. He loves afternoon drive. It's a fact. Don't look it up. But I do think this is interesting because there's not a lot of guys I actually would extend right now today. And if they got a deal done at any point between now and the first 4 weeks of the season, I would kind of wonder why.
Oh, so you'd wonder why? Because you just don't think the team is ready for it? Is that the basis on that?
I don't know he's an essential part of the Browns going forward. He is 29, and that's actually pretty young, but he's had a lot of health issues. Last year, so it's not even that he didn't have quarterback support. He didn't move well last year, and there might be reasons for it. I'm not comfortable. I would need to see him play like he did in 2023 for at least half the season before I'm putting any future money on the books
for David. The good news for him on that is that that happened with Joe Flacco, where he looked his very best in 2023. Like, there's a connection between him and Flacco. And what happened there was that I always thought was interesting is just Flacco bought enough time for Njoku to basically run around and get open, and then he just kept hitting them. I don't let age when it comes to tight ends get in the way that maybe it does in some other conversations. Like, Kittle at 31 was awesome last year. Since hitting 30, he's had back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. Mark Andrews had 11 touchdowns last year. His age 29 season, he'll be 30 in September, and Travis Kelce's my age. Like, you can be an older tight end and still have success in today's NFL. The question you have to ask for David, and I'm leaning towards extend him, by the way, is do you feel like Harold Fannin will be better than him in a year or two, and then you can just supplement him elsewhere? Or do you feel like it's the type of thing that it'll be Fannin, it could be Njoku, and when you have your rookie quarterback, you can be off to the races?
I think David has been a very serviceable pro. And I think, you know, even though he was a late first-round pick, I think the fact he's been here almost a decade, 8 years, going on 9 years, and he's been dependable. Outside of the injuries and early drops in his career, but like the last 5-6 years, he had the
jug machine set up in his house.
I do. Man loves the jugs machine.
That was a fun couple week stretch. It's like, David, you're gonna break a vase or two. Maybe take that thing outside. He's like, no, I got to do it in the living room.
He's like, I don't have vases. I'm a grown man. I'm a single grown man.
He's got fire pits.
So the age is a small part of it for me. I just don't think he's been good enough. Like, he is a dependable tight end. So I guess it really comes down to like what end, like what level, like if he wants top 10 money, I think he's worth top 10.
So let's talk about that for a second, because right now his average per year is around $13 million. That puts him right around top 10 money, somewhere in that stretch. Like, it's not, he's not, I agree with you, he's not Trey McBride money, who's getting $19 million a year. He's not George Kittle money, who's getting $19 million a year. If we treat him like he is a fringe top 10 tight end and then pay him accordingly, let's even say let's take a pay cut for David Njoku, and he's at $11, $12 million territory. Does that set you back too much?
So if we start talking about pay cut, I'm more interested in it. I don't know David would be, because I think given that he's 29, I don't know.
But I wonder how the open market would look at David Njoku.
I think that's a great question. And I think it would he probably gets overpaid because pass catchers get overpaid in the free agent market. There's a point, like, David falls into the category of, I really like the person.
Yeah.
I enjoy the player. And I do think he has been, like, I think his stats would be tenfold better if they had just kept Baker, or if they had found a different quarterback other than Deshaun. Because I think he has gotten better, and maybe the stats don't tell that story enough. I think he's had a hell of a lot more injury than most tight ends. I think he really, the movement was not great last year, which I'm willing to give to. And he falls in line of the category of player of, I think I would rather have you go somewhere and have one more good season, and it looks like we sold on you too early, than have to live through a contract where I've got to eat 1 year where you're just not very good.
I mean, he does seem like an obvious candidate for get him in a stable situation with a good quarterback and you watch him flourish.
Yeah, but I like, okay, if you put him with Joe Burrow, yeah, I think he'd have great stats. It doesn't mean he'd be a great player. Like, when you watch David, you think great? I think really good. I think anywhere from,
I think fringe top 10 in his position.
Well, yeah. So
whatever you think that is. If you think that's good to borderline, it's not great.
I think the problem is,
and I do think his pass blocking is much better than people give him credit for.
There's only 5 to 7 maybe great tight ends. And then there's a middle class of tight ends, of which David is either at the center of or at the upper quartile of.
Yeah, no, he's definitely he's not in the Kittle category. The Kittle, McBride, you know, I keep Andrews in there just because of the volume touchdowns that he got. The Kelsey territory, the Hockenson territory. He's not in that territory. He's in that next group.
But I think that's the most deceiving group, where I okay, David Njoku versus somebody else's David Njoku, meaning like similar age profile production. I mean, he's in the quintessential, the tight end offense in the NFL. And he's had one great year. He's had a couple good years. And then last year was a step back. I don't know. Like, you don't have to pay everyone. And I appreciate right. The Browns' willingness to do so. I think we're at a point where, all right, we're trying to move forward. We're trying to get younger. There's a lot of sense to say, I don't think we need to re-sign David unless it's at a pretty significant discount, where it doesn't matter who's better, him or Fannin. You just have two nice tight ends you get to use.
Okay, but so the hard part about this is that if you're going to do it, you have to do it in the next couple months. You can't wait until after the season. I guess in theory you could wait until after the season, but then you'll be competing against everybody. The bet you'd have to make then is that for your rookie quarterback in 2026, the person you draft in that class, do you feel comfortable? And Stefanski cares about tight ends in such a big way. Harold Fannin, we haven't seen play at all. So it's such a guessing game. But are you comfortable with Harold Fannin being your number one tight end?
I'm comfortable with somebody else being my number one tight end, and that being an open-ended thing. It's, again, I want to make it clear, like, I don't dislike David. It's a matter of principle. Like, I think the Browns have actually gotten into, we pay too many people. And I think David Njoku is a case study of okay, so if they re-sign David Njoku and Wyatt Teller walks next year, that to me is ass-backwards logic.
Okay.
Because,
I get what you're saying.
One to me is a dominant player at his position, fits the scheme, even better than David Njoku fits your scheme, because it's just a tight end positive. That's not specific to David, it's specific to.
I know, it's just we have so many question marks of people that can actually catch the ball. And David Njoku can catch the ball.
I'd rather reinvest that David Njoku money in a wide receiver. And they think differently, because if Kevin's still here, they think differently, because
with $12 million,
you might have one or two receivers on the field max most times.
Unfortunately, $12 million a year, though, right now, is barely a third wide receiver on your team.
Yeah, it is, but you pair with another $8 to $10 million, and you might find yourself a decent wide receiver.
We're comboing up Wyatt Teller money and David Njoku money to then get a wide receiver. That's a different conversation.
And that
might be what they end up doing, by the way.
I'm all in on Wyatt coming back here. I think it's a little ridiculous it hasn't happened already, unless it's a him decision and not a them decision. But I kind of look at this and I'm going, okay, yeah, if I could turn Wyatt and David into a number one receiver and paying that guy, that's something I'd be comfortable doing. 216-474-0092 is a David Njoku extension, the right move for the Browns here. Quick hits coming up at 240. We've got Miles Simmons, Pro Football Talk at 320, also Cleveland Zone. We'll talk about the Browns, a couple NFL offseason things here. Jason Lloyd of The Athletic and 923 The Fan coming up at 4 o'clock. And the lead, we got so much to get into today, though. But, again, is a David Njoku extension the right move for the Browns? Howard wants to talk about World's Best, which we'll get to in about 5 minutes. But support from the Browns doesn't have to be equal across the board. We'll tell you what that means in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.